Howdy, howdy. This is Lily from Madecraft Game, and you're listening to Season 3 of Reading Rulebooks. If you're listening on YouTube, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe, and check out madecraftgame.com for more content. This season, I accidentally planned a ton of Nitzia games, so I figured, why not dive in and do a whole Nitzia season? Today's Nitzia episode is Tigris and Euphrates, so let's get into it. Introduction. Nineveh, Babylon. The ancient texts describe these cities as the origin of mankind. In the fertile Mesopotamia between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers lies the cradle of civilization. Around 3000 BCE, the first large settlements of civilization developed along the embankments of these two great rivers. Farmers began to irrigate large parts of the surrounding lands, reaching out into the arid plains. Their triumph in turn bore consequences. Transport problems arose. In response, the clever artisans turned potter's wheels on their sides and mounted them onto crude carts. Food could then be carried along the dry trails to market. Surpluses could always be moved where needed. Trade flourished, and markets dotted the countryside. In order to record the burgeoning number of transactions, merchants sought new tools of inscription. They began scratching marks into their urns, thereby inventing writing, even before the Egyptians. As the land began supporting denser populations and great concentrations of wealth and resources, society began to organize around a system of classes. A multitude of priests and royal administrators helped govern everyday life. They served many jealous gods and, of course, a succession of kings. Over the centuries, one dynasty succeeded another. The game of Tigris and Euphrates allows you to take part in this fascinating saga. Step back to the dawn of urban civilization. Mesopotamia, the land of the two rivers, stretches before you. Now you and your people can try to forge the mightiest and most balanced culture. Now you can dominate the rich valleys of the Tigris and Euphrates. Game components. One double-sided game board. 153 civilization tiles. 57 red temples, 30 green markets, 30 black settlements, 36 blue farms, 4 unification tiles, 8 catastrophe tiles, 4 player screens, 140 victory point tokens, 15 5-point bricks, 20 1-point bricks, 15 5-point crops, 20 1-point crops, 15 5-point amulets, 20 1-point amulets, 15 5-point goods, 20 1-point goods, 14 treasure tokens, 16 plastic leaders, 4 of each color, 6 plastic monuments, 1 cloth bag. Optional variant components, 4 plastic civilization buildings, 1 wonder tile, 1 plastic Shidu idol. Tiles and colors. Tigris and Euphrates civilization tiles, buildings, leader, and victory points exist in one of four colors, black, red, blue, or green. Each component and color combination has a unique thematic name. For example, blue civilization tiles are farms. This rulebook references components by their name. However, when a component is tied to a specific color, the name is printed using that color to help players learn both the name and the color of each component. Furthermore, when this rulebook references tiles, it is referring to civilization tiles. All other tile types will be mentioned specifically. Assembling the monuments. Before you play your first game, assemble the 6 monuments. Each monument consists of 2 different colored plastic pieces, a small top and a large base. Place the small top over the hole in the large base. Make sure that no 2 monuments are alike. See the image on page 4 for the proper combinations. 1. Blue top, red base. 2. Green top, black base. 3. Blue top, black base. 4. Green top, blue base. 5. Red top, green base. 6. Red top, black base. Setup. To set up a game of Tigris and Euphrates, follow these steps. 1. Set the game board. Place the game board in the play area. Use the standard game board, which has a gold rather than a blue border. The other side of the board, which has a blue border, is used for the advanced game, which we'll talk about in a later section. Place a red temple tile on each of the 10 board spaces marked by the winged beast, called a Shidu. Then place a treasure token on top of each temple. 2. Prepare the reserves. Put all the remaining civilization tiles into a bag and shuffle them together. Then place the 4 unused treasure tokens back into the box and all monuments near the side of the board. Finally, divide all of the victory point tokens by color and place them by the board. 3. Choose dynasties. Each player chooses a dynasty consisting of 4 leaders. The 4 leaders should bear the same dynastic symbol, i.e. the archer, the bull, the pot, or the lion, in a different color. Each player then takes the unification tile and 2 catastrophe tiles that contain their dynastic symbol, along with the screen bearing their dynastic symbol. Note, players are identified by their symbols, not their color. Everyone uses all 4 colors. Then, each player draws 6 tiles from the bag. He places the tiles behind his screen so that only he can see them. He leaves his leaders, his catastrophe tiles, and his unification tile in front of him, and in full view of the other players. Put the spare leaders, screens, unification tiles, and catastrophe tiles back into the game box. Choose a starting player at random by placing all of the player's unification tiles with the dynastic symbols face down on the table, mixing them, and then picking one. Play will proceed in a clockwise order. Object of the game. The goal of each player is to develop all 4 of the key spheres of civilizations. Settlements, black, temples, red, farms, blue, and markets, green. To do this, players will position their leaders, create and extend kingdoms, build monuments, and resolve conflicts. They will thus gain victory points in each of the 4 spheres. At the end of the game, players compare their lowest sphere. The winner is the player with the most victory points in their lowest sphere. Kingdom. Players will build, unite, and destroy kingdoms during the course of the game. They are fundamental tools in the development of everyone's civilization. A region is any area on the game board covered by a lone tile, i.e. a temple, or 2 or more linked tiles. Regions do not contain leaders. At the start of the game, there are 10 distinct one-tile regions. Tiles and leaders with a common edge are adjacent. Tiles or leaders are linked if they are adjacent or if they are connected through a chain of adjacent tiles and leaders. A group of 1 or more linked tiles and at least 1 leader together is called a kingdom. A kingdom can contain several leaders. It does not matter whether they belong to the same player or different players. Kingdoms grow when leaders and tiles are added to the board. Kingdoms can be united and separated. As long as a kingdom contains only leaders of different colors, everything is peaceful. Conflicts arise when there are 2 light-colored leaders within 1 kingdom. We'll talk about conflicts in a later section. The Tigris and Euphrates River. Both of these great rivers originate in the mountains of what is now eastern Turkey. They make their way southeast, first weaving through semi-arid hills, then winding across the parched plain of Mesopotamia, until they reach the Persian Gulf. Together, they brought life to the great cities in the heartland of the Fertile Crescent. The first true civilization, Sumer, grew up above the confluence of the Tigris and Euphrates. Turn structure. The player taking his turn is called the active player. During his turn, the active player may resolve up to 2 actions in any order. After his turn is complete, the player sitting to his left becomes the active player. There are 4 different actions an active player can resolve. The 2 actions that players will resolve most often are positioning leaders and placing tiles. Through these 2 actions, players will build kingdoms and gain victory points. Additionally, players are allowed to replace tiles from their hands, and, twice per game, they can alter the game board by playing a catastrophe tile. Below is a list of the possible actions the active player may resolve during his turn. The active player may choose 2 different actions or the same action twice. 1. Position, place, move, or withdraw a leader. 2, place a tile. 3, play a catastrophe tile. 4, replace up to 6 tiles from his hand. After a tile is placed, a few other events may occur. Conflicts, monument building, or treasure distribution. These events are explained in detail later, and the action during which they occur is not finished until the event is resolved. A detailed explanation of each type of action follows. 1. Positioning a leader. Each player possesses a dynasty of 4 leaders. A king, black, a priest, red, a farmer, blue, and a trader, green. A player may only position his own leaders. A leader can either come from outside the board or be repositioned from another space on the board. Furthermore, a leader can be withdrawn from the board. Leader placement must obey the following restrictions. 1. A leader must be placed on an empty space. 2. A leader can only be placed adjacent to a temple, red, i.e. the leader and the temple, red, must have a common edge. A leader cannot be placed in such a way as to unite kingdoms. 4. A leader cannot be placed on a river space. In certain situations, tiles can be removed from the board or turned face down. When the last temple, red, adjacent to a given leader is removed or turned face down, the leader is returned to the player of that dynasty. No victory points are gained from positioning of leaders. A player cannot gain victory points without first having at least one leader on the board. Placing a civilization tile. A player will have 6 civilization tiles behind his screen at the beginning of his turn. Players use these tiles to extend regions and kingdoms, strengthen leaders, and gain victory points. To place a tile, a player takes a tile from behind his screen and places it on the board according to the following restrictions. 1. A tile must be placed face up on an empty space. 2. Farms, blue, can only be placed on river spaces. Settlements, black, temples, red, and markets, green, cannot be placed on river spaces. 4. A tile cannot be placed where it would unite more than 2 kingdoms. When placing a tile, it can be placed adjacent to another tile, leader, or in isolation, i.e. adjacent to nothing. After a tile is placed, it cannot be relocated. Most of the time, a player will gain victory points when a tile is placed. The victory point is always the same color as the placed tile. Gaining victory points. There are 4 types of victory points. Each one is colored to correspond to the specific tile as follows. Bricks, black, amulets, red, crops, blue, goods, green. A victory point is gained by placing a tile under the following circumstances. 1. If the tile is placed in a kingdom, and this kingdom contains a leader of the same color, then the victory point is gained by the player controlling that leader. 2. If there is no leader of the respective color, but there is a king within the kingdom, then the victory point is gained by the player controlling the king. No victory point is gained if 1. The tile is not placed in a kingdom. 2. There is no leader of the respective color or king to gain the victory point. Or 3. The tile is placed so that it unites 2 kingdoms, even if there are no conflicts. Victory points are gained immediately when a tile is placed. They are kept hidden behind the player's screens. When a player gains a victory point, he always takes a token valued at 1. At any point during his turn, a player may exchange 5 tokens valued at 1 for 1 token valued at 5. Playing a catastrophe tile. At the beginning of the game, each player receives 2 catastrophe tiles. A player can use them to permanently occupy and negate spaces on the board. When played, the catastrophe tile remains on the board for the rest of the game. It creates a blocked space that cannot be used again. A player can place catastrophe tiles on an empty space or on top of an existing tile, which is then removed from the game. 1. A catastrophe tile cannot be played on a tile bearing a treasure or a monument. We'll talk about monuments in a later section. 2. A catastrophe tile cannot be played on a leader. A catastrophe tile disrupts the connection between leaders or tiles. In this way, a catastrophe tile may divide a kingdom into 2 or more parts. If a catastrophe tile destroys the last temple adjacent to a leader, that leader is immediately withdrawn from the board and returned to the player. Replacing tiles. A player may take up to 6 tiles from his hand and return them to the box face down. Then, he refreshes by drawing the same number of tiles from the bag and adding them to his hand. Discarded tiles are permanently removed from the game. If a player replaces tiles as his first action, he can use the new tiles to carry out his second action. End of a turn. A player's turn ends after he carries out his 2 actions, or if he chooses to end his turn before taking both available actions. If one or more of his leaders are linked with monuments, he may gain additional victory points, which we'll talk about in the monument building section. Finally, he refreshes his hand of tiles by drawing from the bag so that he ends his turn with 6 tiles in his hand. If other players have fewer than 6 tiles at this point, then they also refresh their hand of tiles. Then it is the next player's turn. Conflicts. Conflicts can arise when someone positions a leader or places a tile. A conflict occurs whenever there are 2 light-colored leaders, i.e., 2 farmers, blue, or 2 kings, black, in a given kingdom. This can happen in 2 ways. So there are 2 different types of conflict. 1. Revolt. A revolt occurs when a leader is positioned in a kingdom that already contains a leader of the same color. 2. War. War occurs when 2 kingdoms are united through a new tile, and the new, larger kingdom contains leaders of the same color. Keep the following in mind. 1. Leader placement can only cause revolts, not wars. 2. Tile placement can only cause wars, not revolts. The conflict is resolved using tiles on the board and additional tiles from behind the screens. An action does not end before the conflict is resolved. After all conflicts have been resolved, a kingdom will only contain leaders of different colors. Conflicts are resolved as described in the following 2 sections. Revolts. A revolt occurs when a leader is positioned in a kingdom that already contains a leader of the same color. During a revolt, the player positioning the new leader is the attacker. The controller of the existing leader of the same color in that kingdom is the defender. Both the attacker and the defender draws their strength from temples, red. Resolve revolts as follows. 1. Count temples adjacent to leaders. Both the attacker and the defender draw strength by counting the number of temples adjacent to their conflicting leaders. A temple can count for both leaders. 2. Players commit temples from their hand. First, the attacker, and then the defender. May increase their strength by committing to conflict any number of extra temples from their hand, placing them face up in front of their screen. Each player can commit extra temples only once. Whoever has the higher total strength, total number of temples, wins the conflict. The defender wins ties. Example 1. The attacker, Pot, has 3 temples adjacent to his leader. The defender, Bull, has 2 temples. The attacker commits 2 extra temples, while the defender commits 3 extra temples. Hence, each player has a total of 5 temples. It is a tie, so the defender wins. The consequences of a revolt are as follows. 1. The leader must withdraw his leader from the board. 2. The victor gains 1 amulet because the conflict was fought with temples. 3. Both players remove all committed temples from the game, placing them face down in the box. Example 1 continued. The victor gains 1 amulet. The loser's leader is returned to him. The extra 5 temples committed by both sides are removed from the game. Wars. Wars occur when 2 kingdoms are united, and the new, larger kingdom contains leaders of the same color. Remember that 2 kingdoms can be united through tile placement, but not through leader positioning. 3 or more kingdoms cannot be united by 1 tile. No victory point is gained when a tile is placed that unites 2 kingdoms. Instead, That tile is covered by the unification tile. A new, larger kingdom is created. If the new United Kingdom contains no leaders of a slight color, remove the unification tile and conclude the action without resolving any conflict. However, if the United Kingdom contains leaders of the same color, war erupts. All conflicts between two like-colored leaders are resolved individually. Each time there are wars between leaders in more than one color, the active player decides which war to resolve first. For each war after the first, players resolve the war using the kingdom's current configuration, as recent wars might have disrupted the connection between leaders and tiles. Hidden information. 1. All victory points and treasure tokens gained and tiles beyond a player's screen are hidden information. They are kept secret from other players until scoring. 2. The number of tiles in the bag is hidden information. Players cannot deliberately count the tiles in the bag. 3. Tiles that are removed from the game are hidden information. They are kept face down in the box and cannot be viewed by any player. Resolve wars as follows. Determine who is the attacker. If the active player chooses to resolve a conflict that involves one of his leaders, he becomes the attacker. Otherwise, the next player, in clockwise order, with a leader involved, becomes the attacker. The other player involved in the conflict is the defender. 2. Count the supporters. Both the attacker and the defender draw strength by counting their leader's supporters, which are tiles of like color on the board that are still connected to the leader. These tiles need not be adjacent to their respective leader. They only have to be in that part of the kingdom on his segment of the unification tile. 3. Players commit tiles from their hand. First the attacker, and then the defender. They increase their strength of their supporters. They do this by committing tiles to the conflict any number of extra tiles of the matching color from their hands, placing them face up in front of their screens. Each player can commit tiles only once. Whoever has the higher total strength, supporters on the board, plus tiles committed from hand, wins the conflict. The defender wins ties. Conflict rewards. 1. Winning a revolt. After a revolt, the winner gains 1, and only 1, amulet. 2. Winning a war. After a war, the winner gains 1 victory point token of the matching color for each tile plus the leader that the loser removes from the board. Example 2. There are 2 wars, one between the traders and one between the kings. The player who united the kingdom decides to resolve the traitor war first. The attacking lion player counts 1 supporter, i.e. market, in his kingdom and commits 4 extra markets. The defending pot player has 2 supporters in his kingdom and commits 1 extra market, even though this is not enough to influence the outcome. He uses this opportunity to discard an unwanted market tile. The attacker has a total of 5 strength, while the defender has 3. The attacker wins. The consequence of a war are as follows. 1. The loser must withdraw his leader and remove all supporters from the kingdom. 2. The victor receives 1 victory point that matches the color of the withdrawn leader, and 1 also of matching color for each of the supporters that are removed from the board. The tiles committed from any player's hand do not count toward victory points. 3. The defeated leader is returned to the losing player. 4. Supporters of the defeated leader and any committed tiles added by both players are removed from the game and placed back in the box. 5. If 2 priests, red, cause a conflict, then there is an exception. Temples support temples, i.e. supporters, which bear a treasure or have another leader adjacent to them are not removed. Amulets are only gained for the defeated priest and the temples actually removed from the board. When a tile is removed from the board, it might cause the kingdom to be divided into 2 or more parts. As a consequence, leaders originally exposed to war can end up in different kingdoms. If this occurs, then those leaders are no longer in conflict. However, if there are still leaders of like colors in the kingdom, a new war commences with the active player determining which conflict is resolved next. The active player can influence events by choosing the order of conflict resolution. After all wars are resolved, the active player's unification tile is removed and placed back outside his screen. At the end of the active player's turn, all other players who have committed tiles from their hands also refresh their hands back up to 6. Example 2 continued. The losing pot player removes his merchant, 1, and both of his supporters, 2. The losing pot player removes his merchant and both of his supporters. The victorious lion player gains 3 goods. The 5 committed tiles on both sides are removed from the game. At the end of this war, the kingdom is divided into 2 parts. The kings are not in the same kingdom, so they are no longer in conflict. In this case, the second war between the kings does not occur. The unification tile is withdrawn from the board. The tile that it was covering remains. The action is concluded. Temple clarifications. Temples are important for many reasons. Leaders must be adjacent to temples at all time, and all treasures begin the game on temples. As such, some interesting situations involving temples may arise. The most common situations are listed below. 1. During a revolt, a single temple can be used by multiple leaders. 2. If a player uses a catastrophe tile to block a space containing a temple that is adjacent to a leader, and that leader is no longer adjacent to a temple, that leader is removed from the game board. 3. If a temple is flipped face down or replaced with a wonder tile, which we'll talk about in the wonder variant section, any leaders adjacent to that temple that are no longer adjacent to any other temples are removed from the game board. 4. When a player loses a war with a priest, he cannot remove temples from the game board if those temples either contain a treasure or are adjacent to a leader of any other color, king, trader, or farmer. The victor does not gain victory points for tiles that remain on the game board due to these exceptions. 5. If a temple contains a treasure token, which we'll talk about in the treasure distribution section, and the active player wishes to use that tile to build a monument or wonder, he temporarily removes the treasure token and either places it back on the tile after the tile is flipped face down, monument, or places it on the cross-shaped wonder tile, wonder. This treasure token is still in play and players can collect it following the normal rules. Conflict summary. If a leader is positioned in a kingdom which already contains a leader of the same color, a revolt occurs, and the temples adjacent to the leaders, plus any additional tiles committed from hand, decide the outcome of the revolt. If 2 kingdoms are united such that the new, larger kingdom contains leaders of the same color, a war ensues, and the strength of the original supporters of the involved leader, plus any additional tiles committed from hand, determine victory of the war. Playing a unification tile. When a player unites kingdoms, he places his unification tile on the top of the linking tile. As a reminder that a war might be about to take place between the newly united kingdoms. Whether or not a war ensues, no player gains victory points from the linking tile. Only 1 unification tile can be in play at any given time. It remains on the board only while the player resolves any conflicts that might arise from the act of unification, and is removed after all wars, if any, are resolved. A player does not place a unification tile when he links regions or when he links a kingdom and a region. Monument building. Monument building can occur when someone places a tile. There are 6 monuments in the game. Each monument consists of 2 different colored parts. Be sure to assemble these in the correct configuration. If the active player places a tile in such a way that he creates a 2x2 square of 4 like-colored tiles, he may flip those 4 tiles face down and place a monument on top of them. 1 color of the monument must match the face-down tiles. If that color is no longer available, the monument cannot be built, and therefore the tiles cannot be flipped face down. If tile placement initiates a war, the player must resolve the conflict before flipping tiles face down. If the square still exists after resolving the conflict, the active player may build a monument. If the player completing the square does not build a monument as part of his current action, the tiles remain face up. A monument can be built only at the end of the action in which the active player completed a 2x2 square. The four face-down tiles still count as part of regions and kingdoms, linking leaders and tiles. However, they no longer count for any other function, i.e. supporters in conflict. A monument cannot be destroyed. When four temples are flipped face down and a monument is built, the following applies. 1. If a treasure lies on a temple, it remains on that face down tile. 2. If a leader is no longer adjacent to a temple, withdraw that leader and return it to the player. Example 3. Returning the temples face down, the bull player elects to create a red and blue monument. A monument regularly provides victory points. At the end of the active player's turn, he determines if one or more of his leaders are in the same kingdom as a like-colored monument. For each such leader, he gains one victory point of the leader's color for each like-colored monument in the same kingdom. For example, if he has a blue leader, farmer, in a kingdom with a blue monument, he gains a blue victory point, crop. Since a monument has two colors, it can provide victory points for up to two leaders each turn. A king gains a victory point only when linked to a black monument. While the placement of a tile can allow a king to gain victory points in other colors, in the absence of the respective leader, this does not apply for monuments. Example 3 continued. The lion's trader is no longer adjacent to a temple. He withdraws it. At the end of his turn, the bull player gains one crop. At the end of the lion's turn, the lion player gains one amulet. Treasure distribution. Treasure distribution can be initiated when a player positions a leader or places a tile. At the beginning of the game, 10 treasure tokens are placed on the first 10 temples on the board. Treasures are gained in the following way. If a kingdom contains more than one treasure at the end of a player's action, the trader in that kingdom must gain all but one of these treasures. If there are treasures on a special border space, the player must take treasures from those spaces first. After that, he may choose from which space to take his remaining treasures. If there is no trader in the kingdom, the treasures remain there until the kingdom has a trader. If there is no trader in the kingdom, the treasures must remain there until the kingdom has a trader. Example 4. The lion player places a farm tile. First, the bull player receives a crop. Then, the lion player takes the upper treasure because the trader in the kingdom belongs to him. The lion player places the farm tile. First, the bull player receives a crop for their blue leader. Then, the lion player takes the upper treasure because the trader in the kingdom belongs to him. He has to choose this treasure because it is on a space with a special border. Each treasure counts as one wild victory point. At the end of the game, you may allocate each treasure individually to any victory point type of your choice. First round example. This corresponds to the image on page 13 of the rulebook. Andrew's turn. Andrew begins the game. He positions two of his leaders on the board, a king and a priest. In this way, he creates two kingdoms. Barbara's turn. First, Barbara positions her farmer, extending one of the kingdoms created by Andrew. Then, she places a farm on the adjacent river space. For this, she receives one crop. The farmer and the farm are of like color, and she controls the farmer. She draws one tile from the bag to refresh her hand. David's turn. David positions his king and creates a new kingdom. Then he places a temple. He gains one amulet because there is no priest in the kingdom matching the color of the temple. Hence, the controller of the king gains the amulet. Note that David has placed his temple in such a way that his king is now adjacent to two temples. David refreshes his hand by drawing one tile. Karen drew four temples at the beginning and feels aggressive. As her first action, she positions her priest in the same kingdom as Andrew's priest. A revolt arises. On the board, both players have one temple in support of their leaders. Karen commits three extra temples from behind her screen. At most, Andrew could commit two extra temples, but that would not be enough to tie with Karen, so he refrains from committing any extra temples. Karen wins 4-1. Her committed temples are removed from the game. Andrew must withdraw his priest. Karen gains one amulet for winning the revolt. As her second action, Karen places her fourth temple on the board and receives another amulet. Then she refreshes her hand by drawing four tiles. Now it is Andrew's turn again. Game end and winner. The game ends when either of the following conditions are met. 1. Only one or two treasures remain on the board at the end of a player's turn. Or 2. A player who is attempting to draw a tile is unable to because the bag is empty. At this point, all players lower their screens. Each player determines in which sphere they possess the fewest number of victory points, with each player freely allocating his treasures to any spheres. The player whose lowest sphere has the highest number of victory points is the winner. In the case of a tie, the tied players compare their second lowest spheres and so on. If multiple tied players are evenly matched in all four spheres, those players share the victory. Advanced game rules. Civilization buildings. The advanced game uses four civilization buildings. They include a palace, black, a library, red, a market hall, green, and a granary, blue. During setup, place these buildings next to the board near the monuments. When a player places one of his tiles on the board so that it becomes part of an interrupted vertical or horizontal line of three or more tiles of the same color, that player may take the corresponding color building from beside the board and place it on any one of the color tiles in the line. If the corresponding building is already on the board, the player may remove the building from its current location and place it on any one of the color tiles in the new line, provided the new line is longer than the line where the building is currently located. If a building is on a tile that is part of both a horizontal line and a vertical line, the new line must be longer than each of the building's current lines. Civilization buildings must be placed before building a monument or erecting a wonder if able. When a player places a tile in a kingdom containing a building of the corresponding color, the reward for the respective leader, or the king if the leader is absent, increases from 1 to 2 victory points. Rewards for conflicts or monuments remain unaffected. Players must resolve conflicts before building placement. A tile directly under a building counts in conflicts and cannot be removed. Catastrophe tiles cannot be played on a tile that is under a building. If you flip over a tile that is under a building in order to build a monument or a wonder, remove the building and place it next to the board for future use. Example: a granary can be placed on the horizontal line of 3 farms. A library can be placed on the vertical line of 3 temples. The trio of markets is not a straight line, so a market cannot be placed here. If a settlement was placed at the D position, see example 14 for the image, a player could place a palace on that newly created vertical line of settlements. The rise of civilization. Sumer's king and city-states emerged before 3000 BCE. They brought writing and commerce to the Fertile Crescent. In time, circa 2371 BCE, the Akkadians supplanted the Sumerians and created a more centralized state. Their king, notably Sargon and his grandson, Naram-Sin, forged an empire stretching far to the north and west. Many people and dynasties would follow, all seeking to rule these rich lands. Advanced game board. The Advance Game Board is an alternate board printed on the back of the original board. It is differentiated by a blue border rather than gold. It uses a different map and contains 4 extra treasures. When you play with the alternate board, place 1 temple with a treasure on each of the 14 Shidu spaces. Then, play by the original rules. When a player collects a treasure from a kingdom containing more than 1 treasure, he must first collect those treasures from spaces outlined with a special border. English variant. In order to restrict the opportunity to discard tiles during a conflict that do not influence its resolution, the following variant may be adopted. The attacker may commit extra tiles. If thereafter his total exceeds the current strength of the defender, if he has no chance of winning the conflict, he cannot commit any extra tiles. The defender can commit extra tiles only in order to win the conflict by establishing a tie. No more, no less. Wonder variant. The wonder is a special 5-tile monument with a cross-like shape. A player may erect the wonder when he creates the cross figure of 5 tiles of a single color. He discards the 5 tiles that form the cross configuration and replaces them with the wonder tile, which cannot be destroyed. Place the Shidu idol on top of the wonder tile. The wonder tile still counts as part of regions and kingdoms, and it can link leaders and tiles. However, it no longer counts for any other function, i.e. as supporters in conflicts. All other monument rules apply to the wonder. At the end of the active player's turn, if he has a king in a kingdom with the wonder, he gains 1 victory point token in a color of his choice. Example 7. If the active player's king is in the kingdom that contains the wonder, he receives 1 victory point token in the color of his choice at the end of his turn. And that's the rulebook for Tigris and Euphrates. This is one of my favorite games. It is something I was introduced to a little bit earlier in my board gaming career, and it had a very special place in heart because there was nothing like it in my world when I first played it. Looking at the rulebook, I really like the historical flavor that's given throughout the rulebook, even if it doesn't necessarily make sense in some of the areas where it was placed. Sometimes it does feel like it's just a filler to take up room on a page, which made it kind of difficult to know when to read it when I was doing this episode. I also find it fascinating that the player's pronoun is always he, but then there are females within the example. So, I mean, it's definitely a thing of old rule books, but it's nice to see that there was a woman somewhere in the book instead of just he. You know, a lot of times it'll be he or she now or they, which makes more sense to me because I like to be included, but hey, we're getting there. Otherwise, the rulebook's pretty well laid out. The examples all have very good corresponding visuals. They will basically say, here's a sentence, one, and show the one action where it is on the picture, which really can help you see exactly what's happening. It definitely is really good in showing each example one by one. One thing I did find kind of interesting is the breaking up of examples, where there's like example 3 and 1 sentence, and then there's 2 paragraphs of rules, and then example 3 continues. I do wonder if that was really necessary. It might have been easier just to do all of the rules and then the example in one chunk rather than breaking up the examples. I do get it for some other ones because there are long paragraphs in each part of the example, so splitting it up might make it feel a little less intimidating, but sometimes it can just be a little bit more confusing when you don't have that set up and follow through within the same area. I will say that the revolt and war section is always kind of funny because that hidden information box is just like right in the middle of it and has like nothing to do with any of that. Which also brings me to one of the most argued points within the board game community of hidden trackable information. So the tiles behind your screen are not trackable. They're randomly pulled out of a bag. You don't know what other people have, so you don't know where anything could be. They could be anywhere, they could be anything. It's not exactly easy to keep track of them. You could technically count how many have been taken away from the game, but that still doesn't tell you how they're distributed in people's hands, especially in like a 4-player game. But according to the rulebook, Tiles that are removed from the game are hidden information that you have seen. So you could write it down as you're removing it. It'd be the same as just keeping it open, which is how I prefer to play it. The same could be said about victory points. When a person gains a victory point, you see them gaining that victory point. It's no secret how many points they got from it. They gained 1 point for placing the tile. They gained 1 point for having a monument in their kingdom. You know how many points they're getting. That's not a secret. But these are considered hidden information, which is really strange because, again, if I can keep track of it with a pen and paper, to me that's trackable information, so why is it hidden? Now, you could say it's part of the game, and to some people it can be. I personally find it more interesting to be able to know what I'm competing against rather than having to kind of guess and just do my best. I'm not somebody who easily remembers things, so when there's information that I have to keep in my mind, I get a little overwhelmed and it takes away from the other parts of the game because I'm getting hyper-focused on the wrong thing, which is another reason why I prefer the information be out, because I don't want to have to play with a pen and paper, because I will do that if I have to, because otherwise I'm not sure what I'm competing for. Like, obviously, I always want to do my best, but it is a game against other people, so I'm trying to make my best better than other people. And so it could mean just doing amazing across the board, which is unlikely for me, or it could mean I know that the lowest category people have is 4, so I just need to get my lowest category to be 5. It gives a target, it gives a goal, it gives something a bit more concrete than just do your best. That being said, when we've had hidden information and non-hidden information, I have seen ties under both circumstances. I actually prefer the tie in the case of knowing information. That means the player set themselves up to do as well as somebody else. It also means they chose to end the game before doing better than somebody else, which is a choice I don't see a lot of people making, and I think it actually does help dissuade the tie in its own way, because somebody wants to make sure they're doing better than the other person, rather than just as good. But if you don't think you can do better, being able to do just as good is a really good option that I like having. When I first played this game, the thing that tripped me up the most was the internal versus external conflict, the revolts versus wars. The revolts were interesting because it only cares about red tiles, and the temples can support multiple leaders, so which didn't feel very natural, but it works the way it works. It also felt interesting that you just get one amulet and then you're done. Whereas wars can give you an exponential number of amulets depending on what happens. Now, I have seen people force wars between two other players just because both of them were too strong, and so they wanted to destroy one of the other versions, which is a really good way to interrupt other people without necessarily being directly involved. However, they have to be very careful about the order because they first chose a war between, I want to say it was red leaders, and in doing so, the person who won was not the person they assumed would win, which meant that the war between the two black leaders never happened. And that's what they wanted more than anything. So it was kind of like consequences of your own actions moment, but it was fun and it was very enjoyable. I have seen that the wars can really skew points and really create wild swings in certain directions. I've seen somebody win, I want to say it was 8 points from a war, which is an insane amount, but that's why you're looking at the lowest amount gained rather than the highest, because the likelihood of you winning 4 wars in 4 different colors is pretty minimal. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I do think it's a little bit more difficult just because the randomness of the bag plus the board itself plus other people will be taking stuff from you. These civilizations pop up and get destroyed. It's kind of like an ebb and flow, which is really cool to see as well. One thing I love about Tigris and Euphrates is the fact that it's ever-changing and can constantly change. Monuments are permanent. Catastrophes are permanent. Every other space is up for grabs. And speaking of monuments, the monuments are really interesting for many reasons. But the monuments I find the most interesting are the blue monuments, because there's typically only 1 to 2 spaces on the board that the blue monument can go, so it's actually even more limited than the other monument options, which is why getting blue victory points from monuments makes more sense for monuments of a different color rather than the blue color. The other funny thing about monuments is they really incentivize aggression, whether that's a revolt or a war, because it's a free victory point at the end of the turn, and you don't want to let somebody just do that for the entire game. That seems pretty strong, and you want that for yourself. Like, victory points that are gained passively are the best type of victory points, in my opinion. So it does take some active actions to get there, but that is the way of it. However, then it becomes like a King of the Hill vibe, where people are constantly replacing each other, or someone goes off and builds a second monument in a different kingdom, and then things get a little spicy. Especially when kingdoms have more than one monument, things get really crazy, just because you can get 2 passive monument points as long as there are 2 monuments with that color in the kingdom. If you have 2 monuments that contain red and the red leader in the kingdom, that's 2 red points every turn, which is even better and more likely going to put a target on your back than not. One very important aspect of this game is not getting attached to your leaders, because they're going to move, they're going to change, they're going to shift, they're going to get kicked out, they're going to get overthrown. And you can work really hard to build a kingdom only for someone else to come in and destroy it. But that's the nature of the game. It's not really that you're building a space so much as you are using the space to your best advantage before somebody else comes and forces you out. I really love how the removal and placement of tiles really does reflect the constant changing of civilizations within this area between the two rivers. I think that Tigris and Euphrates really accomplishes showing that kind of history well when you think about it. Now, if you just want a fun game and don't want to think about history, that's also completely fine. But it's always interesting when a game can replicate history and the development of an area in a game that is so open and player-driven, because you have to make sure that no matter what the player's choices are, it reflects that version. And even if you're someone who's not aggressive, when I first started playing board games, I was not as aggressive as I am now. This game makes you be aggressive. You have to be, otherwise you're not going to end up on the board. And that's also something I really appreciate about this game, is it's just naturally aggressive, but in like a non-hostile way, just in like a, yeah, I wanted this stuff way. It's nothing personal. I just wanted your stuff. And I do think it is one of the games that helped me get over my fear of aggression within board games, because it's just a natural part of the game and it doesn't feel targeted. It doesn't feel personal. It just is what it is. That's not to say that 3 people can't just like force all of your leaders out and that might feel like bad, but again, it is what it is. You must be doing really well if all the other players are acting against you, or at least they think you're doing really well. That depends on if you're using the hidden trackable information or not. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to check out MCG on other social media platforms or go to madecraftgame.com for more content. And I hope you enjoy playing the game.